Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Can I just ask?
Shut up, Evan.
I'm curious.
Could you shut up, Evan?
One thing I was thinking about.
Shut up, Evan.
So there are some rumors out there.
Evan, shut up.
Is it okay if I just ask?
Shut up, Evan.
Okay, but can I just?
Shut up, Evan.
I didn't even say anything.
I haven't washed my face.
But that's not visible.
Is it bad? I mean,
It looks fine. You look good.
Okay, wait. Okay, then if that's the case, hold on. I'm trying to get a boyfriend, you guys. Like, I can't look like shit. I mean, I'm literally wearing like the top from last night.
You think you're gonna find a boyfriend on Evan Ross Katz's big gay Instagram?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Absolutely. It's the dating app for 2023, honestly.
Okay, thank you for saying that, because I feel like, yeah, I've not had that opinion espoused, but I'm down to, let's meditate on this.
Okay, I've already put it out in the universe. I prayed on it last night. I said, I'm going to go on this podcast, and my future husband is going to be listening to it, and I'm gonna get married in, like, I don't know, fucking Positano, like, by summer of 2023 after this.
Okay, you know, you put it out there, and he shall come. Okay, everyone. Hello, I'm Evan Ross Katz. Welcome back to Shut Up, Evan. It is the season 4 premiere of Shut Up, Evan. This was not supposed to happen until January of 2023, the year that SD, our guest, was getting married. But circumstances were such that there's this show, it's called The White Lotus, and the demand was so fervent, we just were like, we need to expedite this premiere, start things up, and who better to have that conversation with than our guest today. But before we get to our guest, I want to first introduce our co-host today, my fabulously talented friend, Sean Ross. Sean, hi.
Hi. Such an honor to be on Shut Up, Evan.
Yeah, Sean, we are crossing over from our Survivor podcast, Drop Your Buffs, and here we are firmly planted in the universe of Shut Up, Evan, which apparently has a huge heterosexual male demographic, which I'm excited to dig into it with our guest today, the great and fabulous, you already know her, you might not know that she worked on this season of The White Lotus, which of course we will get into. Hello, good morning to Esty Haim.
Good morning, you guys.
How you feeling? I mean, I feel like you've been up for hours.
For out, clearly. Clearly, just fresh as a fucking daisy. I mean, I'm backlit. I look sort of angelic.
Yeah, no, it's very white lotus.
It's really working for me.
Yeah, I think you look great.
And like the hair from my head on my headband, like on my headband, is really working for the heterosexual contingent that's listening to this podcast right now.
Totally. Totally. Now, let me start off by asking, you posted some behind the scenes footage from your time in Sicily on your Instagram recently.
Yes.
And it got people chatting for a number of reasons. First of all, we had footage of Jennifer Coolidge singing Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. Additionally, we had an appearance from Kesha, who yes. I then DM'd you about, and you confirmed the fact that Kesha came to Sicily. Can you fill us in on every detail from top to bottom about that?
Okay, do you want me to like start, like, to quote The White Lotus, like, we're really starting from the beginning?
Please.
Okay. So this past January, I went through a really tumultuous breakup, like a really bad one. I'd been with this man for almost 5 years. I thought we were going to get married. He was my rock. We're still very good friends, but marriage was, and like the continuation of this relationship was not happening. But because of that, I was fully inconsolable, like beginning of January, like not leaving my house, like not taking care of my mental health as I should have. And in the middle of January, I got a phone call. Like, this was like 2 weeks after we'd broken up. I got a phone call from a really good friend of mine, Dave Bernad, who is the producer of White Lotus. And I called him. He called me while I was in the midst of sobbing. And so, of course, I picked up the phone. So I had a good cry with him on the phone. And he listened to me lament for a good, like, 10 minutes about just how, like, being in this house that I, like, built basically, like, with my boyfriend and, like, everything reminded me of him and blah, 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 blah. He was like, basta, we're not doing this anymore. Like, you're not, we're over this, this, like, this heartbreak bullshit. Like, you're, it's time for you to get the fuck out of LA. And I have the remedy. Come to Sicily. We've all seen Eat, Pray, Love. Get the fuck out of LA. I'm going to be in Sicily in another month. Come visit for a week. For a week. Just get out of LA. And twist my arm, am I right? Yeah. Twist my arm. I was like, okay. So I like went on Expedia and like booked a fucking flight. to Catania, rented a car. I was going to have this like whole, I had this whole adventure planned. And then not but like a week before I was supposed to leave, Kesha called me and was also talking about like wanting to get out of LA and like her birthday was coming up. And I was like, dude, why don't you just come to Italy with me? And we'll celebrate your birthday in Italy. And she was like, for real? And I was like, yeah, stay in my room. I have a goddamn room on the set of White Lotus. Just come. Just come. And she went on Expedia as well and booked a flight to Catania. We got there the same day. So we got there like late February. And her birthday is the first week of March. So we, you know, again, I rented a car. So my favorite story / scariest story about being on the set of White Lotus was the day that I left the set in my car. Cause Kesha and I wanted to have like a romantic, like day out. So we wanted to go to Isla Bella, famously depicted on the last episode. Sidebar, I'm pretty sure I know like a lot of the, like the think pieces have been like, did they, didn't they? They went, uh-huh. I think they 100% did.
And just for clarity here, we're referring to Ethan and Daphne, did they, didn't they fuck on the island? And you are firmly in the mindset that fucking was hot.
I don't think they fucked. I think she blew him.
Mm. Got it. This makes sense. You know, he goes in later and he goes down on Harper. So perhaps he was satisfied earlier by Daphne and then exactly. Wanted to sort of, yeah.
Also, can we like all say like, thank you, Daphne? Like, thank you. She basically saved their relationship. She really did.
She's a healer.
She's a healer. We all need one. And IRL, Megan Fahey is a healer in real life.
Mm. I get that impression.
The rumors now, are true. She's an amazing human being.
Can I ask you, so you were staying at the hotel that, you know, served as the White Lotus, yeah?
Sorry, I feel like I get so giddy talking about this because it was like the time of my life. So I feel like I'm smiling like I'm 5 years old throughout like this entire like podcast. But it's true. It was literally, when I tell you, it was like the time of my life. I've never had that much fun in my life.
Well, you certainly don't have to apologize for smiling or...
No, I'm just looking at myself. I'm looking at myself like on this camera and I'm like, you look so nerdy, my dog. You look so... I'm like, it was so much fun. I was in the car with Kesha and we went to Isla Bella together. Like, I need to calm down. Okay, so I know we're getting... So, there's so many tangents. Everything is so tangential. Okay, so I'm in a car... Me and Kesha decide to go to Isla Bella together. And in true Italian fashion, like, there's no signs anywhere for parking. Like, cannot park here from 8 a.m. to whatever. So I park on the side of the road, and there's all these cars, like, all these cars around me. So I'm like, okay, this is probably okay to park. And we go down to the beach, and there's, like, boats, and, like, you can take a boat, and they take you to Isla Bella. They take you to these caves. Like, it's magic. It's magic. We pay for the boat. Like, it's, like, a little – it's a – like, a gondola type situation. And we're having the best time. And then that lasted, like, an hour. And then – Kesha and I are, like, hugging. We're like, this was the best idea. Like, thank God we did this. We go up the stairs. All of the cars are gone except mine. And behind my car is a tow truck. And in front of my car is a police car. And I look at Kesha and I go, that's not for me. This is a mistake. This is just a huge misunderstanding. And we walk over to my car and I try to open it in front of a policeman. Because I'm just like, you know, like, come on, big misunderstanding. And this man starts screaming at me in Italian, like screaming at me. I don't speak a lick of Italian, a lick. Like, I can say allora now and like certo.
So in this situation, you're kind of the Jennifer Coolidge and he's Tommaso and you're on the yacht. If we were to, you know, put this in context of the
show. A billion percent. If I had seen that episode, I would have also just gone like, I'm gay. I'm gay too. I'm gay. But instead, I just started immediately crying when this man was yelling at me. And Kesha was like is the super practical one in the situation, gets on like Google Translate, and he was like, basically he said, I need to give you a ticket. And I hear that and I'm like, oh my God, give me a ticket. Give me a ticket. Give me a ticket. Give it to me. Give it to me. And I will be on my merry way. And then he goes in Italian, no, you pay now. Which, like, that's not normal. I've gotten tickets before. I've never had to pay on the spot.
Yeah, that's a red flag.
Red flag. But again, naive American. I've also, like, seen Broke Down Palace. I'm, like, not trying to go to jail. So I'm like, I guess I have to pay this person. He basically was like, okay, it's 150 euro for me, 150 euro for the tow truck. So I go to the ATM and I pull out 300 euro. I pay them both and they leave. No receipt, no nothing. That was it. It's like it never happened.
That's almost the best case scenario.
We got super hustled. And I have a video that I can send offline of me crying in the car. Kesha filmed me crying in the car on the way home because I was so scared. So then from that point on, and that was like day two, I decided I'm not leaving the hotel. So I spent all of my time. I didn't explore. I didn't go anywhere. I was in Taormina and stayed there. And that was really, I think, the reason that I got so close to everyone, because I just didn't leave.
Much like the characters in The White Lotus.
Yeah.
Never leaving the hotel.
Don't, like, words to live by. Don't leave the hotel. Just, like, stay in the confines, like, the safety of the hotel. So from that point on, me and Kesha were just traipsing around Taormina, like, going to ruins. And, like, it was just a magical, magical place. And I'd been on a movie set when I did Licorice Pizza, but nothing like this. This was like camp. It was like everyone lived in the hotel. And like I posted a little bit about it, but like we had like jam sessions every night. I DJ'd parties every night. We did karaoke almost every night. They like the hotel had like a screen and a projector, and I would just plug my computer in. And the cast would just sing. We would just sing together. I don't want to say that it was like a party every night, because there was definitely like work that had to be done the next day. But while I was there, it was like everyone was just having the most fun. Just so much fun.
Okay. But speaking of the work, because it wasn't just a getaway for you, right? You were the music consultant on this season of The White Lotus, but many are asking ourselves, what does a music consultant do?
Okay. So I went to the White Lotus set without a job and left the White Lotus set with a job.
Ah.
Essentially. So when I got to set, again, like I was, you know, singing with the cast, and that was before I even had the job, and like doing karaoke or whatever. And Bea, and I call her Bea, I never call her by her character's name, but it's not Lucia, it's
Mia.
So Bea, Mia, I met I met her the second day that I was there. And we just started talking about like music and the music on the show, and things were a little malleable at that point. They kind of had a couple ideas for what songs she was going to be singing and playing. There were a bunch of options. And I was like, let's go to the piano and jam. Casual, super casual. And we just kind of started going like back and forth singing with each other. And Dave, my friend Dave, was with us at the time. And I think saw like how much fun we were having and how comfortable Mia was with me. And I think was kind of like, wait a minute, we don't have anyone helping with the music on set, and there's so much music involved in this season. Would you ever consider staying on and just consulting on the on-camera music? So like the stuff that Federico was playing, Giuseppe, the piano player that almost died, and Mia's character. And I, again, twist my arm. I was like, I get to stay here and like help kind of cultivate the music that was going to be played on the show. And so I stayed. And it was mostly just me and Bea, and like, and there was like a scene that was cut out of the show that I wish would have stayed in. But obviously, like, there were so many amazing scenes that did get cut. But one in particular was, there was a sing along in the bar to Piano Man.
Oh wow! Wow.
Yeah, that, and I was in that scene. I know. And I was left on the cutting room floor.
No.
I know. And it was so, it was like this big sing-along with everyone in the bar. Like, and it was supposed to, I think it was supposed to be in the pilot, but it was Giuseppe playing piano and me singing with him. Like the random, like drunk at the bar was like, oh, I know the words of this song. Like, and then I like sat with, but like, I worked with Giuseppe on that, and it was basically just me and Mia every day, just kind of working on the arrangements. Yeah. The arrangements, vocalizations, doing like, just trying to make her performance, especially on camera, the best that it could possibly be.
So you mentioned Bea, as you call her, Beatrice. Yes. And you know, I reached out to several cast members, past and present, in the hope of getting their voices included here today and relevant to this conversation.
I have a question for Esty Haim. Oh. Ciao, Esty. This is B, and I'm asking you this because you are an amazing musician, so I really want to know. If you were the hotel manager at the White Lotus, would I need to seduce you in order to get the job as a pianist there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, she wouldn't have to seduce me at all, but I would. Like, I would, like, like it wouldn't be, like, a transactional thing. Mm-hmm. But I would, she's so hot and so beautiful and, like, also just the sweetest human being. I loved her. And I, you know, even, like, post-show, I think... You can see it online. I feel like I've just been so effusive with her because I'm such a big fan. And she was so much fun to work with. And again, it was like the time of my life. I think everyone was just so stoked to be there. And I think that kind of you could feel that. And I think that's what people are kind of responding to, is just that, like, the chemistry of the set and everyone on set just had such a good time together, mm-hmm. and was so happy to be there and felt so lucky. And I think, you know, Mia's character also was like singing these like classic Italian and American like songbook songs that are so pertinent also to what's going on screen. Mike White is just a genius when it comes to that stuff. And there was one thing that didn't get to make it on screen that I really hoped could, but it was like, there was some red tape regarding it. But, you know, the last song that Mia plays is O Solo Mio, which is then interpolated by Elvis Presley later on. It's now
or never, come hold me tight.
We had talked about doing kind of like a medley of those two things. And it was happening until the last minute. And then it just like, it was too hard to get the publishing and the rights to the song. Mm. But it was things like that where like, I was basically coming up with ideas and ways to like, I guess, spice it up a little bit and helped with that. But it was me sitting on set, listening to Mia's performance and trying to help give her the best performance that she possibly could. And I think a lot of that just came from like, everyone needs a cheerleader. You know what I mean? And I was just such a big fan that I, every step of the way, and I do it with Dingo and Alana too, when we're like recording. So I've been used to doing that for a really long time. Just being like, try this, or I was basically just like a coach. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it sounds like in many senses you were Quentin to her Tanya. You know, you were that force that comes in and affirms her and allows her to be her whole self. Now, I asked her where she thinks Mia was going to go from here because, you know, as all of us know, we have this final scene and basically Lucia and Mia are more or less the final girls of the White Lotus. And so while I had Beatrice, I was like, you know what? What's going down next with Beatrice? Excuse me, with what's going down next with Mia? And this is what she had to say.
Okay.
I think that Mia is the kind of girl who would want to push further in her career. She is very ambitious, so maybe she dreams of a bigger stage than the White Lotus. But at the same time, I also think that she is very happy where she's at right now. Because for a young musician, it's already a big step to be able to do music and make money out of it. I mean, it's great. I'm very happy for her. But who knows? Maybe one day a music producer will have dinner at the White Lotus and they will notice her and maybe they will sign her and we'll see her in, you know, a couple of years being a very famous Italian pop star.
I mean, I think international pop star.
Mm.
Why stop at Italian? Let's go global. Mrs. Worldwide.
Send her to Eurovision.
Honestly, Mia the character, 100%. I think like in the future, I mean, what I really want is like the Thelma and Louise story of Lucia and Mia. That's where, and like add a dash of Valentina in that story as well. I think that has legs.
Yeah.
But I think Beatrice as a human and as an artist herself, I think I would follow her to the ends of the earth. I want to see her play. I've never seen her play like with a band. It's just been me and her on a piano. I would love to see her play a show live with a full band. I think she's capable of doing anything. And I've, again, post show, I've still been like her biggest cheerleader and been like, let's get in the studio. I want to get in the studio with her, you know? I also had the best time with his real name is Federico. On the show, he's Giuseppe. But like, you know, and I think I posted a video of us like playing piano before the finale. But like, he was also amazing and like had this like illustrious career as a musician in Italy prior to the White Lotus that I had no idea about. But he was like showing me YouTube videos and like of him like in the 80s, like on TV. I was fully shook. He was so, and also very attractive man, present and like back in the day. Like, very attractive. Everyone on set was attractive. Everyone. All of them. It was a very attractive set.
It's always a very attractive set at the White Lotus.
I know. It was crazy.
I have to ask you, because we're just 2 days out from the big finale. Such a television event. It's been so fun to have appointment television back and felt so catered to specifically us and yet everyone. And so I want to get your hot takes on the conclusion of The White Lotus season 2. First of all, did you know how it was going to conclude? Did you know about Tanya's death? And then what was your reaction to seeing it play out on screen?
So I did know how it ended. I was keeping the dirty secret for a very, very long time. So I feel so much lighter now that everyone knows, and I don't have to keep this deep, dark secret. But I hadn't seen the episode until it aired. My hot take, do I want 10 more seasons with Tanya in it? Absolutely. Like, would I watch an I, Tanya about Tanya? Absolutely. Like, do I want that movie to be made, Mike White? Absolutely. Like, almost like the origin story of Tanya. Like, where's that movie? But do I also think that, like, it ended, like, in the most tragic, but, like, also, like, poetic way, and Jennifer Coolidge's performance. Like, I'm also, like, so emotional about the show. I'm usually never this emotional, but I started crying when she was crying, when she was like, oh shit, I have to jump into this fucking boat and I'm so scared. Like, I got fucking misty and started crying. It was really hard to watch and so emotional. I know that a lot of people really like that, at least that have talked to me, were bummed because it means we don't get any more Tanya. But at the same time, like Tanya, like that, what a way to go, Tanya. Like, doing like that shooting scene all in one take, her performance, like, what the fuck, Jennifer Coolidge?
Yeah. Yeah.
So good. She's so good.
Did you have any reaction to... So Jennifer did a round of press yesterday, and there's a really interesting interview between her and Mike White in the New York Times, in which Jennifer is very blunt in stating the fact that she was not happy with this ending. She begged Mike White, her words, to reconsider. You know, maybe Tanya falls into the ocean, but somehow makes it out. Did you have any conversations with Jennifer like this, or were you aware of that pushback or that sort of discomfort that Coolidge had with her character's fate?
I wasn't aware of that conversation, like having that conversation, but I was, when I was watching the, show with bated breath, because I thought last minute Mike White might change the ending just to throw everyone off. So, like, there was a moment where Tanya's, like, in the water, like, you see her eyes close, and I thought for a second she was just gonna open her eyes. And like, in a weird way, like, I was like, he would totally fucking do that. Mike White would totally do that. But, and I get it, because again, I think I share the same sentiment with everyone that was on set, which was, it was so much fun that none of us wanted any of it to end. And like, and I'm sure, you know, Jennifer Coolidge feels the same way. And it's like, I don't want Tanya's character to go away. I want to do season, you know, 7, 8, 9 as Tanya, you know? Yeah. I feel like there were a couple things in I was like, maybe Rocco and, what's her name? Isabella. Is it Isabella? The other girl at the desk? Maybe they go on their honeymoon for season 3. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of like what is going to carry over from season 2. This is all just me pontificating late at night, like after like eating an edible and then thinking about what season 3 is going to be like. That was my first thing.
Yeah, Sean and I were discussing it yesterday, and one thought I had was, I would love to see the opening of a new White Lotus somewhere else. And so I'd like to see, like, rather than, I mean, obviously we go to a new White Lotus, but I want to see the infrastructure sort of like coming to life, and the idea that all of these guests are at a very newly opened hotel. And so all of the intricacies that come with the idea that the hotel might not be perfectly up to snuff by White Lotus standards just yet. Before we get into more, let's take a quick break and hear from today's sponsor. I want to take a moment to tell you about my favorite skincare brand, one that's gone from if you know, you know, to the one everyone's talking about, Sunday Riley. From cleansers to brightening creams to clarifying face oil to acne treatment masks, if you've got a skincare problem, Sunday Riley's a one-stop solution. Just looking to maintain your near-perfect skin? They can help with that too. Right now, this holiday season, Sunday Riley has launched their 12 Days of Gifting, which includes 30% off bestseller holiday kits, including their all-in-one lactic acid treatment, named one of InStyle magazine's best beauty buys of 22, and my personal favorite, the CEO Afterglow Brightening Vitamin C Gel Cream, which was a Women's Wear Daily Editor's Choice of 2022. Not too shabby. Go to SundayRiley.com to check out all of their product offerings. That's SundayRiley.com. You won't regret it. And we're back.
Esty, I'm curious about what working on the White Lotus was like for you as a creative person whose endeavors, at least publicly, have been as part of a three-piece band with your sisters. What was it like for you to then pivot and work on this very different type of project in a totally different medium?
It was the first time for myself that I had gone away from my siblings and kind of did something on my own. And Alana had done that with Licorice Pizza, even though me and Danielle and my parents were in the movie, but that was very much like an Alana Haim journey. And then for me, going to this set and kind of having autonomy in that way was... And again, not like making decisions and giving advice without have like being flanked by my two sisters, who also were my cheerleaders all the time. Whenever I had opinions, they'd be like, yeah, that's totally right. This was all me. Was formative, was super formative for me. And like, I think if anything, it really helped me find, you know, a lot of times I think it's hard for siblings, especially, to find their footing within a family and like what their role is. And I think because I'm in a band with my sisters, I think sometimes, you know, I can at times forget like, oh, I am Esty Haim. I'm not just a sister in a band called Haim. I'm an individual as well. I think twins have that a lot too. But like, I think that it was a good reminder that like, yeah, like I can do things on my own musically. So it was really important for me to do that. And it was born out of, you know, heartbreak and like most things in my life. It's like, I write records about heartbreak and then I fly to far off places because I'm heartbroken. So
it must be so rewarding though, to have this experience that was, it sounds like it was formative in a sense, and also in another sense, just incredibly inspirational, while also having the thing that you made be so beloved by so many people. I feel like that's kind of rare. I mean, I wrote a book about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and one thing that I learned is this show that I love, everyone hated making it. Like, they absolutely hated it. And so it's so refreshing to hear, not just from you, but from everyone that I've spoken to and that we've read about. This was just such a joyous set. And I think one of the principles of Mike White, beyond his talents as a writer-director, is his ability to bring together people and create an environment in which creative people feel the autonomy to be creative.
100%. I think that while we were making it, I think we knew at the time that like, or at least we were hoping that everyone would kind of feel the joy permeating out of our pores and that it was translating to the screen. But again, that's a testament to Mike White and his ability to like bring that, the energy from set and have that be, you know, cultivated through people's performance. And, you know, again, like you said, it was such a inspiring experience for me. And being able, also, I think it was really fun to be able to be like the music bitch on a set of all actors. That was so fun. It felt like, it really like... it really gave me confidence, because I think I also forget sometimes that, like, as I'm around musicians all the time, and, you know, to be around people who were kind of looking to me for musical guidance, I think also felt, you know, it gave me confidence and made me feel really good. So yeah, I want to do this forever. Like, if anyone else has music on their set or needs musical consultancy, like, and they're listening to this podcast, I'm right fucking here. And if you have a friend,
and if you want to get married,
like,
even,
yeah, like, say. If you have a friend that's like a straight man, or, like, honestly, like, whoever who, like, has a crush on me, get at me in my DMs.
Great. Like, I'm at really Jizzy McGuire.
At Jizzy McGuire.
Okay, let's rewind to season one, because I imagine, like many of us, you were a fan of the first season. Were you watching in real time? What was your entry point to the OG White Lotus?
Well, again, one of my best friends is Dave Bernad, who is the producer on the show. And I was on the phone with him while he was in Hawaii filming the show, being like, this is so kooky. You're like, you're making a TV show in the middle of the pandemic. Like, what is going on? And we were also, you know, kind of like not trauma bonding, but like, I guess trauma bonding about how psychotic it was to be in production in the middle of a pandemic, because we were also making Licorice Pizza at the same time. So, you know, the fear that, you know, we were going to go out and get COVID, and then the set was going to be shut down and cost everyone millions of dollars, and like talking about that, and like, you know, cooking for ourselves, and like, and just all the shit that we, I think, have forgotten about from 2020, or at least I've, like, I think for us, self-care, have like forgotten about that feeling and forgotten about that fear. But I was, you know, FaceTiming with Dave, and he was like showing me sunsets from like his balcony in Hawaii. And I was like, I hate you. Like, let me show you like my messy kitchen that like has been that way for the last 2 months, like dishes that have not been done. And so when the show premiered, I watched it like at 6 p.m. when it came out on that Sunday, and fell in love. I think like everyone else, I think the Steve Zahn of it all. Once I saw that Steve Zahn was on the show, I was like, I'm in. Like, you like put a fork in me, I'm done. Like, he's. I think that was when I knew I was straight, when I saw him in That Thing You Do. It was like him and Ethan Embry, like the 1-2 punch of him and Ethan Embry in That Thing You Do. I was like, this is my favorite movie. I'm officially straight. I officially.
An under-referenced film, I must say.
Which is a crime, honestly. Yeah. Shout out to Gary Getzman and Tom Hanks for making that movie. The play tone of it all. Like, that movie, that soundtrack, like, talk about music from
the soundtrack.
Movie.
Yeah.
Fountains of Wayne, like God's gift. Truly.
Now, speaking of season one gave us two Emmy award-winning performances, one in Jennifer Coolidge, of course, and the second being Murray Bartlett, which brings me to our second call-in for the show.
Oh my God.
Hi, Esty. This is Murray Bartlett. I played Armand in season one of White Lotus. Firstly, I just want to say I love season two. It's been such a thrill to watch the show just as a viewer this time, and I've just absolutely loved it. Secondly, how genius to bring you on as music consultant for season two. I'm such a huge fan of your music, and you've done a really amazing job with the show, so congratulations. My question is about my counterpart in season two, Valentina, the hotel manager, played so wonderfully by Sabrina Impacciatore. And I'm wondering if you have a favorite Valentina moment and or a favorite Valentina moment that you were excited to set to music. Lots of love.
I mean...
do you need a moment?
Like, you guys can't do this to me this early in the morning. You can't. Oh my god. I love him so much. And the fact that he likes my music is like too much. Okay, I'm fine. Valentina. My favorite Valentina moment, I think seeing Sabrina's performance on her birthday, her at the bar being seduced by Mia. I'd been rooting for her the entire season. I just wanted her to fucking let go for once, because she deserves it. Like, you can tell that she's like, she's so passionate about her work, and she's like so invested in like the culture of the White Lotus and like being the best hotel manager and giving the best service to the people that come to that hotel. And she's constantly worried about other people. And finally, she was being taken care of. I think was like such a release, I think, for everyone watching. And yeah, like Valentine, like her character, my heart broke for her like the entire season. I mean, like fucking Rocco, man. Fucking Rocco. What a babe. Am I right?
You are right. If you were to give Valentina a song, you know, say Mia's sick one night, Giuseppe's no longer around, Valentina's gotta, you know, head on over to the piano and croon. What are you having her sing?
Oh, that's easy. I would have her sing Frank Sinatra's My Way.
Wow.
I did it. I mean, talk about like a lesbian anthem. I did it my way. I'm doing it my way. And she did.
And she did.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I love that. Let's take a quick break before we continue and hear from today's sponsor. If you know me, you know I love me some cannabis. And one brand that you cannot pry from my hands is Cann. C-A-N-N. It's a THC and CBD-infused social tonic that gives you an uplifting social buzz without the next day hangover. A delicious microdose-infused beverage made from 5 simple, all-natural ingredients. Blood orange cardamom is my favorite flavor, but as Shut Up Evan listeners know very well at this point, the grapefruit rosemary also slaps. Check out their latest holiday campaign film on Paper Magazine's YouTube page, directed by Lake Bell and featuring Benito Skinner, Meg Stalter, and RuPaul's Drag Race winner and former Shut Up Evan guest, Raja. And be sure to pick up your Cann today. And great news, New York State, Cann is finally available for us too via subscription. But that's not all. Use code ERK50. That's ERK50 for 50% off your first purchase. Go to drinkcann.com, DRINKCANN.com to learn more. And we're back. I want to ask about your entry point to Mike White. You know, Sean and I co-host the Survivor podcast in addition to Shut Up Evan, and we are big fans of Mike White vis-a-vis his time on Survivor, David versus Goliath. And then obviously, you know, the Chuck and Buck of it all, the Enlightened of it all, the School of Rock, it goes on and on. Where do you hover within the Mike White oeuvre? Do you have favorite works of his? Is there something that you gravitated towards in your youth? Where do you land?
I had a, like, Mr. Schneebly stan account, like, back in the day. Like, the Schneebles of it all, like, Schneebles. What an amazing character. School of Rock, are you okay? Okay.
It's just such a good answer.
I'm going to get off of this podcast and start an at I Love Schneebles. Like blogspot.com. I'm going to start a blogspot after this. I think Mike White is a fucking genius. I don't think I'm alone in that opinion. I think that the proof is in the pudding. Like, the man does not miss. I was obsessed with Enlightened when it came out. I love Laura Dern. And I, you know, I loved School of Rock. I did this speech at the Glamour Awards because my sisters and I were awarded Women of the Year, and I made Alana do an impression of me, and the soundtrack to her impression was me impersonating Jack Black in School of Rock, like the like it's so within the Haim like canon and culture at this point, like it's so ingrained. Like I go, like I do one of these, like and rock and rock and rock and rock. Like I've been such a fan of that movie for a very, very long time. And so because of that, just a big fan of Mike White. Yeah. And then when we were on set, me and some of the other cast members decided to watch Mike White's season of Survivor as we were filming.
Yeah, we've got some questions about that.
Yeah, it was so funny and so much fun to see him on the show in that way. And like also to recognize that like that he's obsessed with Survivor, which is like we are all Mike White, I think. At least people with taste. Do you know what I mean? Like people with taste truly are obsessed with shows in that genre and specifically with Survivor. I would be lying if that didn't also inspire me to maybe eventually also want to be on either Survivor or The Amazing Race. Or Naked and Afraid, for that matter. Mm. I truly think that I would, other than the fact that I'm a type 1 diabetic and I need like ice cold insulin like every 3 days, that might be a problem. But if I could have an igloo, like a cooler with me with ice in it that I can pack my insulin away in all day. Like there's nothing that a diabetic can't do, including Survivor, which I would. I would 100% do it.
First of all, I love that Mike White is forcing all of his Hollywood friends to go watch this random season of Survivor. Like that I'm obsessed with as a Survivor fan. See, he should get an award just for that. I don't know what award, but something. But I feel like a lot of people are trying to figure out where the overlap is between White Lotus and Survivor or Amazing Race and his love of reality television. And I think it really comes out in his understanding of people, understanding of their motivation, why they're doing what they're doing, why they're saying something different than what they're thinking. And like, I think that's evidenced in the fact that not only did he play Survivor, he almost won Survivor. According to what I know, the only reason he didn't win is because he told them, like, I feel weird winning. I'm rich and I'm like going to take $1 million from this random guy from the middle of America. And so he like convinced them not to vote for him, is my understanding. But I feel like it just demonstrates that this is why the White Lotus resonates with people so much, is because he understands human behavior at a level far beyond the average Joe. And so I love that you all watched Survivor and love this connection.
Like we would finish filming and then I would go into, you know, either Adam DeMarco or Megan's room and we would watch, like binge watch the season, like till the wee hours of the morning. Like post karaoke, post dance party, we'd be like Survivor.
And so did you have any interaction with Angelina and Kara, who cameoed on this season?
I was gone by then.
Ah.
I know. I heard about it though. And I heard that there was a lot of people trying to keep their chill and some people not really being able to and letting their freak flag fly a little bit. Yeah. Which I would have done. No, I had to, that part of the filming happened, I believe, like earlier in April. And by then I was already on tour. And I honestly, I mean, this is slightly controversial, but like if I didn't have to go on tour, I would have stayed the entire time. I would have stayed, they would have had to like extricate me from the White Lotus. But
you'd be there.
I'm glad I went on tour. Tour was so much fun. I had the best fucking time. But like hearing like stories from when I had like the worst fucking FOMO ever.
Yeah. Well, you missed Angelina. Yeah, of course.
There would have been stories about like how creepy Essie Haim is. If like that would have been on Des Moines, like the next, like this week, like. Do I have a story for you? I have a story. Esty Haim's a fucking weirdo. So I'm actually glad that I wasn't there now thinking about it.
Makes sense.
Because I don't, did you get any, were there, you can tell me, Evan, like, were there any DMs like, Esty's, like, Esty Haim is like a fucking, like, she's a creep. Like, what a weirdo. Because I was,
No, I told you, when I had dinner with Coolidge, she had nothing but delightful things to say about you. And I could tell, even in watching the video that you posted, I sort of feel like I have a sense of when she's like genuinely having fun and when she's performing fun. And that video, it's very clear that she's having fun.
Oh, yeah. No, that night was so much fun. And also, it's insane that the sentence that you just uttered was Jennifer Coolidge had nothing but nice things to say about you, because I'm going to like record that. I'm going to make it my lullaby before I go to bed every night. Like, I'm just going to listen to that so I can dream about it, because she's incredible and so funny and sweet and nice. And it's hard for me to talk about this and not sound also like a suck up or like a sycophant or any of that. But it's true. Like, everyone on set was just so kind and fun and nice and cool and up for everything. And, you know, again, I guess my insecurity just comes from being on set and being so effusive about how much fun I was having. Like, I had no chill. I had no, and it, again, like, I had gone from being in this like hole, this like depressed, sad, I feel like I'm going to be alone forever whole, to then being on this set of magical, amazing humans. And it was like Zoloft IRL. It was like, I didn't have to be on my mental health was just like cleared. I just felt so much better. So again, when I talk about it, I feel like it can sometimes feel a little much.
But that parallels the journey of Coolidge with season one, which she has spoken about at length. She was in a career rut and perhaps a life rut in the lead up to season one and got this phone call. Actually, she got a text message from Mike in the middle of the night that read, "What are you afraid of?" And Mike was like, you know, convinced her to come out to Hawaii and film that first season. And it sounds like this show, everything you're saying tracks with everything we've heard. This show has a magical effect on those that work on it. I mean, even thinking about Megan Fahey's career moving forward, her whole life is changed from here forward. As are, I think, a lot of this cast, but I mean, particularly thinking about her, I feel like the Jennifer Coolidge effect is going to take shape with Megan Fahey from season two and her becoming the most in-demand actor. And I feel like Mike just has this sensibility. And to your credit, you talk about, you know, you think you might have come off a certain way to this cast. I feel like all Mike White wants from people is their humanity. And so the idea that you were able to come on this set and be yourself versus some idea of who you think Mike White wants you to be sort of indicates the very reason why you were put there in the first place.
Thank you, Evan. Thank you. I think that all tracks. And also, like, Megan Fahey, like, I want that EGOT for her. Like, she all, like, do you know that she sings also?
Oh,
like, she's an amazing singer.
Yes.
Do people know this about her? Like, I would be playing guitar and she would be singing Joni Mitchell songs. And I would just look at her and be like, everyone's going to fall in love with you. Like, once this show airs, and it's true. And I'm so happy for her. I'm so happy that she's finally getting like the recognition that she fucking deserves.
So you mentioned the fact that you were watching Survivor with Megan and with Adam, which leads us to our third guest, our third call-in for this episode.
Hey, Esty. It's Adam DeMarco here. I play Albie in White Lotus. I have a two-part question. Where do you get your ideas? And do you ever get scared?
I'm scared constantly. Also, sidebar, I love Adam DeMarco so much. I love him. We would watch soccer together, like every 2 days it'd be a soccer game on. And also it was usually me, Leo Woodall, Adam, and Megan, and the intimacy coordinator. would watch because he was British and we would watch British soccer together, which is also really fun. Do I ever get scared? I'm constantly scared. I'm constantly scared. But I think that that's normal for creatives because, I mean, when you're in kind of like a bubble, as a human being with your own ideas, the thing that I always go back to is like when Tim Cook, not Tim, who am I thinking of? Not Tim Cook. Tim Cook is from Apple, from The Runway.
Oh, Tim Gunn.
Tim Gunn. Thank you, Evan. When Tim Gunn would say, like, you've been in the monkey's den for too long.
Uh-huh.
With ideas. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Like, famously, not a Tim Cook quote.
Yeah, not Tim Cook. Tim Gunn. Yeah, Tim Cook. A little different. Sorry, Tim Cook. And you know what? But maybe equal genius?
Yeah, maybe no, like, not no.
Genius? Tim Cook, Tim Gunn?
And it wouldn't be absurd for Tim Gunn to play Tim Cook in a movie or vice versa. That would not be like absurd casting.
No, and we're going to have to do a side-by-side because I'm also pretty sure that they sort of look alike.
I'm seeing
it. Am I crazy?
You're not.
Okay, they like sort of do look alike. Okay, so when I heard him say that on the show, I was like, oh shit, like, yeah, like you can ruminate on an idea. Like you can write a song or you can think of a concept, write lyrics and work on it for so long that eventually you kind of lose perspective. And that I think is my constant fear. But the good news is I've learned to have the fear and then dispel it, like ingest it. I'm scared and feel the feelings, like feel all the feelings and then be like, but fuck it. Like life is short, but life is long. Like I might put this out or I might have this idea and it might not be the thing that everyone loves, but that doesn't mean that like it's an indication of my talent or emblematic of my talent or emblematic of like what my career is going to be moving forward. It's this thing, it's a moment in time. And like, you just kind of have to be fearless. So yes, I do have fear, but then it quickly turns into like, okay, Essie, shut the fuck up. Just put it out or do it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I was really proud of myself for being fearless in a sense and just getting on a plane and going to Italy. I'd never done that before in my life. I've gone on tour. But like going on a solo dolo, well, not even solo dolo, but like me and Kesha is like, we both were just kind of like, we need a change of atmosphere. And I'd never pulled trig on something like that. I'd had like desires to do so, to just be like, yeah, I'm going to fuck off to, you know, I'm going to go to Spain for a year. You know, how cool would that be? Or like, even like, I'm going to live in New York for a couple months. Like I'd never really had the courage to do something like that. And then I did it in Italy and like, now I think I'm way more inclined to say yes to things, even though I think no is like the chicest word ever. I also think that like, yes, like I've become like a yes girl. Like I'm going to like, yeah, of course I'll do it. Sure. Why not? Let's go.
So stepping into the world of The White Lotus and television, I'm curious how you made that transition from musician on stage, you know, on screen to behind the scenes. Like what were the conversations like that you had with Mike White in developing Mia as a performer or what she was going to sing or how she was going to deliver that?
I think all the conversations that we had were just about performing. First of all those songs were performed live. It wasn't like we went into the studio, recorded them, and then Mia was singing to playback. She was playing piano and singing live in front of multiple people and on a camera and in front of people that she knew, but like, again, sort of like, you know, the difference between like performing as like Essie Haim and Haim in front of a bunch of people where there's lights in my face and I can't see the audience, as opposed to like being a performer on a TV set where you can see everyone looking at you is daunting. I felt nervous and I wasn't even the performer. So I could only imagine that, you know, Beatrice as the actress and the singer and the performer was kind of feeling trepidation about the performance as well. And so my idea was just to try and loosen up Mia as much as I possibly could and make her performance more fluid and valuable and not, and have there be like no indication of like trepidation or like that she was scared to play in front of all of these people on the set, but also within the TV show. So my conversations were just like, I think Mia should be like, you know, the most confident bitch on the block, you know, but like, you know, cause I think IRL, Esty Haim, if like before Haim, just getting on a piano in the middle of a bar and singing, never, would not be able to do that. But you can tell that like it's part of Mia's character. Like she really, really wanted success. And so because of that, you kind of have to fake it till you make it and have the confidence. Like, oh no, like look at, like listen to my voice, listen to my playing. I've got this. Maybe there will be a producer that's staying, like a, you know, the rich producer, you know, staying at the White Lotus. Hey kid, you know, they put you in a picture. I don't fucking know. Like, so you kind of have to show that confidence as a performer. And so I think that's all we were kind of discussing was like, how can we bring the confidence to Mia's character? Because she wants it so badly. And so, and a lot of that was also just like, you know, those songs are so rich and they're so beautiful and they're part of the, you know, they were popular songs for a reason. Mm-hmm. So just trying different iterations and different arrangements of those songs. And there were songs that, you know, that Mia performed and prepared that didn't make it to the TV show. So, you know.
Now, there's online conversation about this show. I don't know if you know. One of the talking points is around Portia's wardrobe. Another one is around Beatrice's voice. It's something that Beatrice has even gotten in on the joke about. For instance, someone shared a clip today of... Do you know that famous clip of Hilary Duff singing in that movie?
My Twitter handle is Jizzy McGuire.
Like, okay, yeah, I'm talking to the historian. Okay, fair. So she's in on the joke. Sean and I have talked about this on our recap of one of the episodes about, like, I genuinely love her voice. And something that you said earlier that I think is foundational to why it works is that she is singing live. It is not a pre-recorded track. And I find the imperfections, and I mean that in the best way, the imperfections in her voice are one of the most appealing qualities about her and further inform that character so much. But I'm just wondering what it's like from your perspective to see people poking fun at her, and is there a line between lighthearted, sort of like laughing at the fact that, you know, Mia is perhaps overconfident in her abilities, or do you think it ever veers into like a place of people are being mean?
Well, I mean, I feel like I definitely experience. I mean, I get made fun of all the fucking time. I mean, speaking from experience, like, I don't know if you saw, there was like a meme of me and my sisters dancing to the White Lotus theme, like doing the, like, I Know Alone dance. Like, I think that it comes with the territory, right? Like if you're going to put yourself out there, you can't please the people all the time. Right. And I think to Bea's credit, I mean, I saw that she posted that. I think she's in on the joke, just like you said. And I think that she's also, you know, she doesn't take herself too seriously, which is also what I love about her. And I think that that's so important. But also I think, like, to the people that are, you know, for the people that are dissecting her performance in that way and being negative about it, I don't think that they necessarily realize, you know, it's really easy to, you know, criticize when you're sitting in the bleachers, right? When you're not the person that's like in the ring doing the thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that for those people that are, you know, like are saying or like picking apart her voice, don't necessarily understand how difficult it is to sing without autotune, first of all, that's a live ass performance. Like her voice, like Mike White, also to his credit, and when we were kind of cultivating her performance, knew that we wanted there to be the imperfections because that's real life. You know, the mistakes are what make it real. Mistakes and you know, like, but also knowing that and watching it, she fucking killed it. She murdered it.
Killed it. So it, like, it's, I messaged you about this. I'm so bothered by the fact that it's not on Spotify because I have to go on YouTube to hear these performances.
I know. And I do think, though, I think moving forward, I think, and I don't think that I'm like giving anything away, but like, I think Bea is going to eventually like release like her own music. And I was like, you should just like release a thing of covers too. Like you kill it. Yep. But I've again been her biggest cheerleader, I think, in that. I think that I believe in her and I believe in her voice and like her original songs. Like, I think she's really talented. But again, like, yeah, of course, like, of course people are going to, you know, trolls are going to be trolls. And again, like, and that's okay. Like, what did, I think Madonna said it, like, the more haters you have, like, the more successful you are. So whatever.
She's quite successful.
And she's quite successful.
I also wanted to bring in one other cast member who I think it's fair to say is the breakout star of The White Lotus season 2. Our dearly beloved and your Survivor David versus Goliath viewing confidant, the one and only Megan Fahey.
Oh!
Hey, Esty, it's Megan Fahey, and I guess I just have one question, and that is, who is your favorite person to eat pasta off of a stranger's plate with?
Well, the answer would be none other than Megan Fahey. One night, it was me, Kesha, and Megan went to a restaurant. I know. Doesn't it sound like a fever dream?
Yeah.
It sounds like my fever dream.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like a full blown like acid trip, like a full blown K-hole. Me, Kesha. Me, Kesha, and Megan went to dinner at like the most delicious restaurant. Again, because I don't know if you know this, but like we were there before the season kind of started, like because it was still technically winter and Taormina is like a tourist town. So like a lot of restaurants aren't even open and there's not really that many people that are there, but like a couple restaurants opened early specifically so that they could like kind of cater to the, like the cast and crew of the show. So we're at this restaurant. We were literally the only people there other than this one man sitting in the corner of this, like, I would say there were like 100 covers, like 100 seats. And it was like only taken up by 4 people. So like, you can kind of like, am I painting a clear picture? Like us 3 on one side of the restaurant and then like one random man eating pasta, not but like 20 feet away from us. And we, you know, we're curious gals, struck up a conversation with this kind patron. And he was like, and he was Italian, but spoke English. And I think it was kind of like, I think he was sort of, he was getting a little like flirty with us. And I was like, well, don't threaten me. I think he said something like, well, you know, like this pasta is like probably better than yours, something like that. And I was like, don't threaten me with a good time. I would love to try your pasta. And so I tried the pasta first and then I was singing its praises. And then that's when Megan and Kesha were also like, well, I want to try the pasta. And so we, all 3 of us, took part in surveying whether or not his pasta was better than ours. It was very Khalees milkshake. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a descriptive, like, visual.
It's better than yours. Damn right. It's better than yours.
And was it?
I mean, I like to think my pasta was better than his. I got the vongole. I think his was I forget what it was, but it was delicious, but I think that my choice was better.
That's what we do with men. We let them think they're right.
And you know what? They can think whatever they want, but we know the truth.
All right. Thank you. This has been an important addition to the conversation.
No, the fact that you got Megan, I loved her so much. We had so many crazy adventures. We went to like Mount Etna together. The scene where like they went wine tasting, we went to that winery for Kesha's birthday. Like Kesha's birthday lasted for like 5 days.
Yeah, Kesha seems like played a really pivotal role in the social scene of the White Lotus season 2. But had you not made that post, this would have been completely unknown.
I think John Grease posted a photo of Kesha like months ago. And I don't think people put it together that she was on set for as long as she was.
No disrespect to John Grease. I don't think his Instagram page is like wildly like followed in the way that someone like Kesha's might be.
Love him. Agreed. I know. And Kesha posted a photo also without context though.
Got it.
But we were celebrating her birthday for like 5 days. Like we celebrated her birthday in Taormina, at Mount Etna, in the hotel. Like we were having the best time. And again, like there was one night we went to celebrate her birthday and the Taormina soccer team was there. And
of course,
can I tell you, when I tell you, when they figured out who Kesha was, it was a bloodbath and mayhem. It was like people were like men were lining up to just touch the hem of her garment. I had to kind of turn into her security guard. But like, and a lot of people also, Adam DeMarco included, we talked about this the other night. He was like, you know, I didn't realize that was Kesha until like a week after she was there.
Probably for the best. I mean, it sounds like if the soccer team was this ravenous in knowing who she was, I feel like it might have been a better situation to like retrospectively be like, oh, that was the legendary Kesha.
Yes. I think that the reason, funny enough, that the soccer team realized it was her was I think someone recognized her in the restaurant. Someone that like worked at the restaurant and then put TikTok on the speakers in the restaurant. And of course, me being her friend. Slash bodyguard. I was like, can't be a coincidence. I was like, this bitch. They're playing a fucking song. And then I was like, I was like, woo. I mean, probably should have been a little more chill about it because I definitely called attention to the fact that Kesha was sitting in this restaurant while the song was playing. But then I think that caught the attention of the soccer team and they realized like, oh, 2 + 2 = 4, like carry the 6. Like, oh man, we are in the presence of greatness. How do I take this girl on a date? Is really what it became. It was like, these men were just like, can I take you to here? Do you want to go on party here? And I just kind of had to be like, we need to go home.
We have to go home and party at the White Lotus Hotel.
By ourselves. I will DJ. Happy birthday. But yeah.
That's amore.
That's amore. When the moon hits your eye. She also really brought the good vibes. I think that like, yeah, she was just so much fun. Kesha's the best. She's been my partner in crime since 2004. I don't think a lot of people know that about us either. I've known her forever.
What?
Yeah, she's been like my best friend since I graduated high school. I met her the summer before freshman year of college when she moved to LA when she was like 17. And I met her at this club called Bordner's. They did a night called Moscow on Wednesday nights. And it was like it was like an indie club. And like we would dance to like Goldfrapp and like the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. And I met her there. And then we ended up going to a street fair together where Chaka Khan was singing. And we ended up knowing all the words. And I was like, oh, wait, you're for me. And we became best friends. And all of my friends had moved to New York to go to NYU. And I was just kind of in LA by myself. I had like no friends. And she became like my best friend. And we just ran around Echo Park together, like being 18. And
wow.
Then she got signed in 2009 and did what she did.
The rest is.
The rest is history.
Okay. Couple last questions before we let you go. I am going to give you a moment from the show, and I would love to get a one-word reaction or response.
Go.
Theo James's prosthetic cock in episode one.
Iconic.
Will Sharp's pubes in episode two.
Mine.
Leo Woodall and Tom Hollander fucking in episode five.
Does it have to be more than, can it be more than one word, or does it have to be one word?
No, let's break the rules.
Hottest thing I've ever seen.
Megan Fahey's face acting when telling Harper about her trainer in episode five.
Heartbreaking.
Megan Fahey's face acting when consoling Ethan in episode seven.
Hottest thing I've ever seen.
Aubrey Plaza's performance as Harper.
Insane.
Tanya with a gun in episode seven.
Top of my list, favorite moment of the show.
I think it is along with the image of Coolidge in the water. I think, so the benchmarks, I mean, like the images of this season that I think will remain, similarly to like Armand shitting in season one, I think will be Coolidge with a gun, Coolidge in the water, uncle and nephew fucking, prosthetic cock, and then, I mean, a lot of these are the images I just mentioned, but those, to me, are some of the burned in my brain. And then just any time that Will Sharp was shirtless.
He's unreal, the way that he looked. Like, no, like him in the water with, not him even shirtless. Huh. For me, it was him with the shirt in the water. That was like, I was having flashbacks to like Backstreet Boys 1994 music video, In the Rain.
Quit playing games with my heart.
Quit playing games. Felt the same way. Had the same reaction. I will say this also. We didn't really touch on this, but like the Albie, Michael Imperioli, F. Murray Abraham of it all. Like that holy trifecta. Like one night I was DJing, and F. Murray Abraham, who, bless him, he's an older man, didn't really come and hang at night when we were all hanging out. One night came down and was like, what have I been missing? Was basically just like, oh my God, like you guys do this? And like, when I tell you, like spun me around on a dance floor, like was full blown, almost like swing dancing with me to like, oops, I did it again. I don't even know how to describe it. I was like, he's like the pop-up I never had, but like also like the pop-up that I wanted to like hang out with like all the time. Like pop-up Murray, F. Murray. I never called him by his name. I was just like, you're Mr. Abraham. Like, you're so fun. Like, you're so sweet. He was I was so intimidated by Michael Imperioli he was the nicest human being. I was just such like, I was such a big fan because of Sopranos and because of like Goodfellas, that like I just felt like I was going to let my freak flag fly away too much if I ever initiated a conversation with him. So I just was like super, you know, he would come around and I would be silent. But he was great. He was just so cool on set. I'm sure everyone that you talked to also said that like he was the coolest person. And Albie too. I like Adam and I got like super close. He's the best. We went on a lot of like excursions down that main drag and like would, you know, drink a lot of coffee together. Anyway.
We need the docuseries on the behind the scenes of season two, because as these little clips are coming out, like the ones that you posted, and other cast members have been putting out little like TikToks and compilation videos of the behind the scenes. And it's like truly some of the most iconic footage I've ever seen in my life.
I mean, yeah, it was a lot. It was everything that like, that you think it was that times a million. I think everyone was just having the best time.
Yeah. You know? The unofficial like canonical image is Jennifer Coolidge in that fur hat.
Dancing with me, like, come on. And Rocco and Giuseppe to ABBA. Like,
yeah.
Muriel's Wedding is like one of my favorite movies of all time. So the fact that I got to dance to ABBA with her, honestly, and I love Toni Collette, I'll take Jennifer Coolidge over Toni Collette in that situation any day. But the behind the scenes of it all, I'm sure, I think there was someone that was on set filming. So maybe it's in the works. Maybe you heard it here first.
I mean, we love an exclusive. Okay, to wrap things up, I would love to have you activate your creative brain for a moment. Not to say it's not been activated throughout this conversation, but okay. If you were to, you know, dreamscape about your ideal for season 3, do you have a location in mind? Do you have a theme? Do you have any cast members? As you start to, you know, put the whiteboard together, say Mike White sent you that text. Esty, are you up? You respond, dot, dot, dot. Yeah, I'm up. What's up? Mike's like, I'm feeling a little bit of creative blockage. What are you thinking for season 3?
Okay. This is what I'm thinking for season 3. I want the Molly Shannon of it all. I want her story. Okay. And I want, can I tell you what I want? I want the setting. I want to be in the snow. I think we need to be in the snow now. I think we need to be like in an icy chalet. I think there needs to be like almost like a Shining element. Do you know what I mean? I think totally. We've done the water. We've done the water. We've done the sunshine. I think we need a little bit of snow. So maybe like a White Lotus chalet in Switzerland.
I was thinking like, St. Moritz.
Yeah. Like, let's go there. Like, maybe there's like a poisonous schnapps moment. Maybe someone's drinking poisonous schnapps. Maybe that's the murder that happens. Maybe someone gets poisoned. But the characters that I want, again, I think that like Rocco needs to come back. I think Rocco needs to go on a honeymoon in the Alps. It's so close. Italy, Switzerland, you're right there.
And he's got that employee discount for
an employee discount. That's why I started working at Whole Foods, because I wanted the discount. I like also weirdly would like, I, you know who I would love to see on the show? Woody Harrelson.
I could be into that.
Like, I want him to be almost have a holistic medicine, multi-billion-dollar company and him be like someone coming to ski. Do you know what I mean? I mean, how chic would it be to have someone like Octavia Spencer on the show?
Huh.
Or like a Viola Davis. I would love to see like Viola Davis there, like with her, like her children.
So I love the idea. It's like let's say we're getting Molly Shannon in the mix and she's playing the same character from season 1, and there's a lot of demand to have Daphne from season 2 back. So I wonder if there's a world in which these two characters come together. We add in Octavia Spencer. I wonder if it's some sort of retreat of some kind, some sort of wellness retreat or something that's brought all of these women to the White Lotus St. Moritz, which is opening for the very first time, and Valentina is there. So we'd actually have to have 2 cast members from season 2, but we did that with season 1, right? Because Greg technically came in, and then we're bringing Molly Shannon. Okay, question for you. Does Jake Lacey play any factor in this, because he is technically Molly Shannon's son?
I would bring him back, yes. And maybe Daphne and Jake Lacey.
Okay.
And maybe Woody Harrelson, this is me just like spitballing, like throwing spaghetti at the wall. Maybe he's like, because it's like a wellness retreat, maybe he's like the Keith Raniere of like, if we're going to like really have like HBO crossover.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Like, maybe that's Woody Harrelson, like almost like a cult figure. Like a cult.
Okay, leader. Yeah. Not to derail, have you finished The Vow season 2?
Of course. There's a bear shit in the woods, my love. Okay. Like, of course I watched it.
Okay. Any thoughts about turning it into a musical? You know, recruiting your sisters and you guys, you know, going into the musical theater space with The Vow?
Okay. I would 100% do a musical. I don't know if, like, out the gate, I want my musical to be about the vow. I think, like, I don't know if that's, like, a smart career move on my part. I mean, yeah, I'll talk to the powers that be. But I don't know if, like, that, the idea of that, like, gets me off my couch to my piano. Do you know what I mean?
Fair. Okay.
But did I, like, was I, like, completely, like, ensconced with the story? I was obsessed with all, like, from the jump. Like, I was obsessed with that whole story. Like, to the point where I wasn't wearing my glasses in Louisiana. I was there for a wedding. I was in New Orleans. And I swear to God, I thought I saw Keith Raniere in the lobby. And I screamed and started crying and ran out of my hotel. And my friend had to run after me. And I was like, I don't know what's happening, but Keith Raniere is for some reason in New Orleans at our hotel. And when I went back in and saw him up close, this man looked exactly like him. It was so triggering. It was almost like he wanted people to think it was him. It was terrifying. But yes, do I think that it would be amazing to have Woody Harrelson play, like, a cult leader? Also crossover with HBO with that TV show with The Weeknd and Lily Rose Depp. Isn't that about
The Idol? Yeah.
So maybe, like,
I like where your business brain is going, because it's like, let's keep it in the HBO universe. Who is realistic that we can get here?
Yes. You know, that's what Pixar did.
Yeah.
Like, HBO, pick up the phone. I have an idea for you. We're going to make it like the HBO verse.
I'm here for it.
Right? Like, yeah. DC Comics, like, don't they have the rights to that? They have the rights to DC Comics. Maybe, like, no, that would be insane if I don't know, like a Superman-esque type character just, like, showed up at the White Lotus. That'd be too much.
I could be into it because, honestly, if you would have told me a year ago that Mike White was going to do an action sequence with Jennifer Coolidge and a gun on a boat, I would have been like, too far. That's not going to end. It worked. You'd so like
the shark a little bit.
Yeah, but it's like, I feel like if anyone, it's like almost, you know, when something goes so far that it sort of flips around on its head and becomes like the subversive things becomes the norm. I feel like that's sort of what Mike White is capable of. So
what's that? I mean, yeah. Jennifer Coolidge's performance is just unbelievable.
Calibrated so correctly.
But yeah.
Okay. I mean, you're right. We could talk.
Okay. I'm sorry. I know. I literally could talk to you all day, all the ding dong day. I could literally talk to you forever. It makes me really sad that you don't live in Los Angeles for that very reason.
I'm not thrilled about it, but I am in Brooklyn and I am available when you find your way here next time.
Okay.
When you spend those 2 months in New York City.
When I have my Felicity, when I live out my Felicity dreams.
I'll be here waiting.
Maybe I'll find a husband finally.
I was going to say, I'll be your Scott Speedman in this scenario. No, actually, I'll be your Amy Jo Johnson.
You'd be my Amy Jo Johnson, our favorite pink.
Let's be honest. The best.
Have
you ever seen her film from, like, I think it's from like 95 or 96, Perfect Body?
No, I haven't seen Perfect Body, but I've seen the Sweetwater TV show where she plays like do you know what I'm talking about? It was on VH1 where she plays like a fledgling rock star.
I would love to see that.
Oh, we will.
Honestly, Jennifer Love Hewitt stole her career for a period of time. Amy Jo Johnson deserves better.
She deserved better.
Bring her to the White Lotus.
Amy Jo Johnson play Woody Harrelson's, like, young wife.
Love.
She's really the brains behind, like, the endeavor. Like, the brains behind the operation.
Our creative brains are spinning. Esty, thank you so much. Anything else you want to add before we part ways?
If anyone from HBO or the White Lotus is listening, like, I want to travel to season 3. Like, I'm at your service, whatever they want me to do. I will get coffee. I will wrap cords. Like, there's nothing that I won't do to be back.
It's funny.
Season.
You say you'll wrap cords. I was just listening to Megan Fahey on Vanity Fair's podcast. She said she'd be happy to be a bartender. It sounds like everyone is just, like, more than willing to come back in any capacity that they will be had. So we remain hopeful. How cute would it be
if me and Megan Fahey are the bartenders at the White Lotus for season 3. Just saying.
It'd be fabulous. It really
would.
Just
saying.
And I would love to find out how Daphne got from where she was to being a bartender at the White Lotus.
Like, Cameron, like, squandered all of his money on Bitcoin.
Dogecoin.
Dogecoin. My Doge. Like, and now she's a bartender. You know, you got to make it work.
You got to make it work. SC, thank you.
I just want to say, I'm sorry that you weren't around on the set of The White Lotus when Angelina was there, but I am glad that you went out on tour because I went to see you in Toronto. It was that night the lights kept going out. And I know that as a performer, that was probably a fucking nightmare, but it was iconic from the audience because you all just like trucked through it and it was so memorable.
My
so
God.
Thank you.
I can't believe you were there. I was like, I was having a full-blown meltdown also because I thought at that show Drake was there.
Oh.
Drake was supposed to be at that show.
Oh.
And so I was like, oh my God, Drake is watching this performance and is like, this is amateur hour. I was having a full-blown meltdown, but I'm so happy that you were there. That was such
a... I left that concert being like, I want to be one of those crazy people that follows Haim around the country. Like, I want to do that. Like, I have to do this again.
But I mean, next year, babe.
Yeah.
Next summer.
See you then.
See you on tour.
Okay.
Well, from Megan Fahey to Kesha to Goldfrapp to Chaka Khan, thank you for just bringing out the legends. Okay, thank you. This has Anytime. Been insightful and helpful, and we will talk to you very soon.
Bye, you guys.
Thank you.
Bye. Shut up, Evan. Shut up, Evan. Shut up, Evan.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.